The Late Set is supported by WRTI members and the Kate May Jazz Festival Foundation, presenting the 25th edition of the Exit Zero Jazz Festival, November 7th through 9th. See India Owens and The Cookout, Omar Sosa Quarteto Americanos, and Roy Hargrove's Crisol, an all-star band led by Roy's longtime collaborators, including trombonist Frank Lacey, bassist Gerald Cannon, and drummer Willie Jones III. More artists to be announced. And I can't wait to be back in Cape May this November 7th through the 9th. Learn more at ExitZeroJazzFestival.com. Now, here's the Late Set.
Welcome to the Late Set. My name is Nate Chenin.
And I'm Josh Jackson.
And hey, it's the middle of 2025.
We made it.
We somehow made it. Here we are.
It's a miracle, Nate.
It really is.
I mean, look at the world today.
I'd rather not, thank
okay.
you.
Okay, yeah, let's just listen
I'd rather to listen to some music.
Good idea.
That has been one of the few unmitigated great things about this year is our listening. It's been a lot of good listening. Kind of overwhelming, actually. I recently looked at the list I have of all of the releases from this year, and you know, we're only at the halfway point, and there's already been just an incredible amount of great, great music from jazz and improvising artists. So on this episode of The Late Set, we are going to each share three standout albums. I don't know if we'd call these our favorites or our top three, you know, but they're in the conversation. How
they're
about
in the
that?
Conversation for sure. Yeah.
I will stipulate that there are a couple of albums that I know that we love that I chose not to put in because
I thought you said no preambles.
I know. I lied. I just did that to right. throw you off.
All right.
We recently had an episode of The Late Set with Brandi Younger, the amazing harpist. Is she one of your picks?
She is not one of my picks.
Yeah, so I left her off precisely because we just had this wonderful episode with her. And I thought, you know, let's spread the love around a little bit.
Right.
In similar fashion, I recently plugged Mary Halverson's album. Is she in your picks?
She is not among my picks. But I have listened to the record and
yeah,
more saxophones for sure.
Mary's album about ghosts. I recently gave my very enthusiastic endorsement to this album on New Music Friday. And so I thought, all right, I've already said my piece, so I'm not going to include that here. So yeah, this is a lot of preamble.
This is just you cheating so you get more picks.
It is, basically. I'm greedy that way. Or maybe I'm generous that way.
You are generous.
It's a better
Nate.
Way to put it. So let's cut to the chase. And I would love to give you the floor for the first pick.
I get to go first.
Please.
Well, I wasn't aware of what all the rationale was for this because I picked something that is, I had to even wonder, was it 2025? Because it's just now coming out in a form that's playable on the radio for 2025. But it was an artist share project.
Okay.
And it's an artist share project from John Clayton called Talk to Me About Mulgrew.
Mm.
I love this record, Nate. It's from 2007, which is why I wondered, is this a new record? But it's John Clayton basically just calling up Mulgrew Miller, the pianist, and saying, let's just go into the studio and play music. And there's something so beautiful about that. It's just so relaxed, the feeling and the way that they treat these songs. There's nothing revolutionary about it, you know? It's just two wonderful musicians. It reminds me in some ways, do you know the record, This One's for Blanton, with Ray Brown and Duke Ellington?
Yeah.
It has that kind of vibe to it. You know, that's a great record on Pablo, by the way, with Pitter Patter Panther and all that stuff. This one's for Blanton. But this one is Talk to Me About Mulgrew on Artist Share Records. You know, and Artist Share Records doesn't get a lot of love, a lot of visibility because, You know, you really have to sort of know these artists like John Clayton or Maria Schneider, for instance, and be a fan already to be a fan who funds their projects.
Mm-hmm. So this was recorded in 2007.
Yeah.
And it was released, previously released, but in digital form. Is that the story?
It's being released digitally this year.
Okay.
But at the end of last year, John Clayton was talking about it and he showed the artwork for people. So it was a project that was currently being funded last year.
Okay.
That is coming to fruition in 2025. Does that make the cut in this?
I think it does.
Right.
It's a 2025 release.
There it is.
Obviously, nothing but, you know, praise and love for Mulgrew Miller, who never had a bad day on the bandstand.
I know.
And obviously a lot of love for John Clayton, who we featured on the late set at the very beginning of this year, days after he lost his home in the California wildfires. So yeah, I have not heard this yet and I'm excited because you brought something to the table that I get to now discover. So
on this huge list of every single jazz release in the world, I found something
under my radar. It happens. I love it.
One nice thing about this too, is if you do end up funding the recording and being a supporter, John Clayton spent some time talking to other musicians about Mulgrew Miller and asked them to talk to him about Mulgrew.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really get some insight from other artists about just how special Mulgrew Miller is and was.
Yeah. Well, it's my turn, I guess.
It's your turn.
So
this reminds me of like when me and my family are eating sushi. So we have a plan on how we eat sushi. We order all these rolls, but then we have to do them one at a time. So I get a turn, and then my wife gets a turn, and then my daughter
gets
a turn.
It's the only way to avoid uncomfortable.
So it's your turn for sushi, Nate.
Okay. Thank you. Well, this is a special spicy tuna right here. This is an album by the pianist and composer Myra Melford.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Splash. And I should say right up front that I wrote liner notes for this album. So, you know, full disclosure.
You've heard it.
I have heard it. I wrote about it. I was compensated for writing about it. So that is, you know.
Again with the disclaimers.
You have to disclose. But
yes.
What I'll say about that is if you think that my judgment is compromised because I wrote liner notes, listen to the album and decide for yourself. I feel quite confident that this will be one of the standout releases, you know, at year's end. People will be talking about this record. It features Myra Melford on piano with Michael Formanek on bass and Chess Smith on drums and vibraphone. And it is the latest in a series of artistic statements that Myra Melford has made, drawing on the legacy of the artist Cy Twombly. She's, you know, completely besotted with Cy Twombly's artistic output, with his, you know, his technical signature and just the world that he created as an artist. And she's really, she has challenged herself to compose and play in a way that recalls his sort of gestural vocabulary. So, you know, Cy Twombly, this artist famous for kind of scrawling abstractions, right? A very kinetic, visceral kind of abstract art. And you don't have to think about Twombly to enjoy the music on here, but I think it helps. I think that there's a sort of mystical translation going on here. The songs have titles like Wayward Line and A Line with a Mind of Its Own. and then simply chalk, you know, one of his, referring to the medium, you know, or the materials. But it's just it's a brilliant album that, it's inside, it's outside, it's very, it balances, you know, interiority and extroversion. I just feel like there's always this push-pull energy on this thing. And it's, you know, it's a great statement from one of our masters.
Good choice. I considered it for sure.
All right.
I think it's a wonderful recording. And I love Myra. Time for another one.
Let's do it.
My role next. Noah Preminger, Ballads.
Mm-hmm.
Came out in February, I think. It's grown folks music.
It is.
It is, I mean, beautiful. He does songs like Stan's Mood, you know, Stan Getz. He does a beautiful version of Someone to Watch Over Me. But he also does these originals. And there's one on there called Democracy.
Mm.
And I think about it, I was like, what about democracy is the reason why this is a ballad? And then I thought, well, maybe it's just the fragility of what democracy is coming to represent these days, you know, like maybe that was on his mind. I don't know, frankly, what was on his mind other than playing beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
The whole record sounds really nice. It's a slow burn and it has that sort of mistiness to it. You know, it's just, it kind of evaporates at times and then becomes very present at other times.
Talk about his tone.
Talk about his tone.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because so much of a... Well, here's a fun fact. You may have forgotten this. I picked Noah Preminger's Ballads as a This I Dig on this very show.
You did? All right.
It was a long time ago. But yeah, right when it was coming out, I endorsed this album. So that's a fun fact. But... So much in a tenor saxophone album of ballads comes down to the sound, right? Just like the voice. And so I'd love to hear what your assessment of Noah's tone is.
It has a plaintive quality at times, mm-hmm. you know, but also a certain muscularity that you also can hear in like a Dexter Gordon too.
Yeah.
But it sort of vacillates, you know. He has the ability to play so tenderly, you know. But yeah, I think it's that sort of plaintive sound of his, you know. And maybe part of that comes from a different school entirely, like a Lee Konitz, you know, or a Warren Marsh,
mm-hmm.
you know. But there's an aspect about him that I know is also very muscular. I remember interviewing him once while he was boxing.
Yeah, he's a fighter.
Yeah. You know, so he's got a little bit of that pugilistic tendency to him as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to kind of reconcile that sort of machismo with, you know, this beautiful sound coming out of his horn, you know, I think that's what kind of makes them special sometimes, mm-hmm. you know. Beautiful sound, though.
Yeah.
Someone who's really worked a lot playing long tones.
Yep.
Long tones. Thank you.
That's a great pick. All right, my turn?
Yeah.
All right, I will go for a hamachi now.
I'm waiting for the uni myself, but go ahead.
So 2025, among other things, is it's the 80th birthday year for Anthony Braxton.
Yeah.
We just celebrated Braxton's birthday. And there is actually some new Braxton music in the world. But what I'm going to endorse is some older Braxton music in a new context.
Yes.
This is the Steve Lehman Trio plus Mark Turner.
This was the overlap, by the way. This is
this
the
was
one.
It.
This
okay.
is the one that I also picked. And then our producer said, sorry, that's taken.
I love it. So we can trade quips about this one.
Yeah.
Steve Lehman is an alto saxophonist like Anthony Braxton. He's a brilliant composer like Anthony Braxton. He formed this group with the idea that, you know, Braxton's music, like Braxton's got tunes, you know, he's known as this composer of, you know, grand and inscrutable designs. I've witnessed performances, including, you know, his piece for 100 tubas, you know, he once composed a piece for 4 symphony orchestras.
I witnessed quite a performance when he accepted the NEA Jazz Masters Award, and his speech was about an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, Braxton is an uncontainable creative force.
Yes.
But he's also a guy who wrote tunes. And this is one thing I love about this album, is that Lehman is basically saying, like, look, let's play these as standards. But he's also saying, you mentioned pugilistic. I mean, this album is so fiery. It also brings out the more aggressive side of Mark Turner. So we have alto and tenor saxophones and this incredible rhythm team of Matt Brewer on bass and Damian Reed on drums. And they're just knocking these tunes around.
Well, that trio is already its own organism.
Absolutely.
And you know, the thing that I thought was super special about this, Nate, is it's live.
Mm-hmm.
It was a live recording. So when you keep that in mind, they recorded this at the now defunct ETA, I believe.
I think it, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So in Los Angeles. And man, you know, when I listened to that the first time, I was like, holy, you know what? Sugar Honey Iced Tea, man. Like, this is live.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of music to take in, you know, it feels aggressive, you know, it feels daunting. It feels a bit overwhelming, but you know, Braxton's music could be that sometimes, mm-hmm. but there's something about the way this trio had its own energy and then Mark matches it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's, what you're saying about that, it reminds me, it's appropriate. If you're watching the podcast on our YouTube channel, on the WRTI YouTube channel, then you can see that Josh and I are in our performance studio seated in these nice armchairs.
Nice cushy chairs.
And so like thinking about the impact of this album reminds me of like a nice Gen X reference point, which is the Maxell commercials, you know?
Yes.
The guy is just like being blown back in his chair. Like the music is just a physical force. And that's, you know, when you play this album on some good speakers and you crank it up, like that is the effect that it will have. It is just like, it knocks you back.
Yeah. Is it my turn now for another one, or are we going to keep going?
It is your turn. Yeah, right. We're just cruising along here.
Great record, Steve Lehman. I was upset that we didn't get to talk to him because he came to Solar Myth.
I know.
And
I know.
We just couldn't make it happen.
We'll have to, you know, Steve is a friend of the podcast. So,
yes.
You know, Steve Lehman, I know you're out there. Let's we'll hook this up.
Let's make that happen. Okay, my last pick. So you mentioned Mark Turner, and I was listening to solo records, Nate. You know, Mark Turner made one.
He did.
We Raised Them to Lift Our Heads, which he did with Jakob Bro for Jakob's label, which is really nice. It reminded me of sort of being at the Vanguard and listening to Mark warm up all the time. Mm-hmm. He just constantly played all the time. That's a solo record. There's another really great solo record by Amina Claudine Myers that is really wonderful too. Mostly piano, but she also plays some organ and does a little bit of vocalizing as well. But the solo record that I have chosen, and this is probably going to lower my credibility in some other arenas that have nothing to do with music, is I've picked Nicholas Payton's Notes from the Zen Gangster, which is a solo record. And there is something about this record, Nate. I've listened to it three times now. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of like George Duke and Azimuth and some of the great music in the 70s that eventually became samples. And I say that because, you know, while it is this whole harmonic world of Nicholas Payton, which he does so beautifully and really does sort of incorporate his concept of Black American music specifically in this way, I thought to myself, I even texted Nicholas, and I said, Nick, you know, like, you and Kareem Riggins should be getting into some good trouble with something like this. I said, or just do it yourself, you know, because Nick can make his own beats as well. I mean, but I thought it has this ability to be in another form after this. It's already complete in some ways. You know, it's a complete concept. It's complete conceptually in the sort of references to Buddhism. There's even a book, which I don't have and haven't seen, but, you know, there's like a 9x9 book that has, it feels like one a day.
I think it's a book of aphorisms.
Yeah, it's like a Far Side calendar, but for Zen thought, you know, with these Zen motifs. But I thought also, like, if he were to hand this off to somebody and say, like, chop and screw this thing up and like create some beats, like, it has that ability to also manifest in some different ways. It reminded me in a different way of what I think Gerald Clayton was attempting to do with Ones and Twos for Blue Note, you know, which I listened to, you know, as these separate tracks. And then also when you put the tracks together, I liked it when the tracks were together. It didn't always work for me when they were separated. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it did, and other times I thought, well, it only kind of sounds good with the other piece. But with Nicholas's record, I thought this could live on its own, or it could live in some other form.
Could be source material.
It could be source material for someone else.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So that's why I like it.
I just saw Nicholas Payton with his trio, you know, featuring Sasha Masakowski. Did I say that right?
Yeah,
I did.
Steve Mazakowski, great jazz guitarist.
I know.
His daughter.
And so this was at the San Francisco Jazz Festival. They, you know, Nicholas came out and introduced the concept. He credited Vijay Iyer with giving him that moniker, the Zen Gangster. It's, you know, he's playing Rhodes, he's playing trumpet, he's playing, you know, acoustic bass like his father. Yep. And then it's being sampled and sequenced and fed through, and there's modular synths. You know, it's this whole mobile studio, basically, in performance. It makes sense that the solo record would also have this kind of multiplicity in it. All right. Well, from there, I guess I'm I've got the last pick, and I will stay in New Orleans.
Oh,
for this pick. And you know, I love this record, Sullivan Fortner's Southern Nights.
Yes.
Another person I saw in San Francisco, Sullivan Fortner, incredible pianist who miraculously just keeps getting better and better and better. And this trio album, it's his first of its kind. You know, he's put out a couple of albums before. He had an incredible solo recording about a year ago.
Solo Game.
Yeah. Solo Game. And Solo Game really felt like a sort of turning point for him in his recorded output. Really a breakthrough album in a lot of ways. And this is a more conventional outing in certain respects. It's a piano trio record that sounds like a piano trio record. It's, you know, it's got tunes. It's not reinventing the wheel. But he had the great insight of putting together a rhythm team of two people who had never encountered each other before. Peter Washington on bass, who is a member of the Bill Charlap Trio, among other terrific bands, and Marcus Gilmore on drums, you know, who has played with, you know, Chick Corea and Vijay Iyer and on and on and on. These two musicians occupy kind of different quadrants of the jazz and improvised music landscape. You know, Peter Washington, I think, you know, you could safely say that he's a modern jazz traditionalist. Marcus Gilmore, he's kind of more of a vanguardist. But they both speak the language completely fluently, and they're both incredible, like beautiful listeners. You know, they're united in their sort of perfect attunement to the needs of a small group rhythm section. You know, like just the kinds of players that always fit no matter what's happening.
And they're always listening to each other.
Absolutely.
I thought you made a great case in point when you talked about in the gig, your Substack, Tres Palabras,
mm-hmm.
and how the interplay happened where Sullivan basically picks up something that Peter drops.
Right.
At the end of his bass solo and then just keeps going with all of these variations. And I even talked to you later about Southern Nights, the title track, the Alan Toussaint tune. And I was like, it's actually kind of genius what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's literally taken, you know, the Junker style of New Orleans piano. People like Professor Longhair and James Booker and Toots Washington. And he has found, like, and of course, Alan Toussaint, and distilled it in some way and then refracted it, mm-hmm. you know? And I thought, oh my God, the things just like, it sounds like filigree, these things he's playing at the top, you know? I was like, but he's actually, that's what he's speaking to.
Mm-hmm.
I recognized it, you know? And I thought, that's kind of remarkable.
And giving it this kind of sparkly, gossamer touch. You know what I mean? Like, because yeah. I think of that New Orleans piano tradition as like very percussive and digging, you know, like it has like a lot of grease and grit in it.
Yeah.
And he kind of, you say refract, it's almost like a dream vision that he offers, you know? Like,
which is so funny you say that, because the original record that Alan Toussaint made for Warner, it almost has, it's got that whirly sound to it, you mm-hmm. know? So it almost has.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It almost has that sort of magical style to it.
Psychedelic.
You know, and Toussaint used to always, I loved when he did this show live solo and he would, you know, tell stories about how the song came to be and everything. So it really is a beautiful record all the way through. And also some songs in Southern Nights that you don't really see get played a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know, Woody Shaw tunes and things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. You know, Sullivan is he's really special because he has like the highest order of elegance at the piano, you know, There's a reason that Fred Hirsch sings his praises, one of his teachers. But he's also a trickster, you know? He has so much looseness and, you know, he just has this facility where, like, he can put anything together. You can toss him any idea, present any, you know, hurdle for him to clear. Like, he will just make magic out of anything. And on this record, he's put together a trio that knows how to take that energy and really run with it, you know? So it's really kind of like all of them are just doing this together. I think it's probably the album that I've played most so far this year. I've just, you know, whenever I'm not sure what to put on, I put that on, because it just makes me so happy.
It's been on, as we say, heavy rotation.
Yes.
Here at WRTI as well. I mean, it's a very easy record to listen to. And when you listen closely, you're rewarded. Good choice.
Sir,
I also want to say, while we're on the topic, you know, there have been some really good debuts that have come so far this year since Marcus is in that trio. Marcus Gilmore, it's funny for me to think about him making a debut, but he has finally released his own music, which is a live recording at the Village Vanguard. I say this because I remember when I met him, he was in his 20s and he had filled out multiple passports by that point. So, but he's finally made his own record. I also thought, in a very similar vein, Malena Casado, she's got a new record. It's her debut. And sonically very similar, you know, it kind of reminds me of where Terry Lynn Carrington and Social Science is. Maybe that's just because of Morgan Guerin, you know, participating in a lot of this music. But well, I like where both of them are going.
Malena's part of, you know, Terry Lynn in her capacity as A&R director for Candid. She's kind of built a family, you know, and Malena is you know, a proud member of that family. Morgan is, but yeah, it's almost like its own subgenre. The Terry Lynn Carrington sound world is like, it's a vibe.
It is reflection of another self.
That's the name. Yeah. Malena really knocked me out when I saw her with, the We Insist 2025 band. I'm looking forward to seeing and hearing more from her. Speaking of debuts, Tyreek McDowell.
Yes.
Young baritone. I just saw him in San Francisco. He's got the spark. And I think we agree that, you know, that this album is, you know, it's really like the introduction. You know, it has the feeling of like, let me tell you all these things that I can do, you know.
Right. A lot of different looks.
I think there are a lot of nods to predecessors, you know, like depending on the track, you could say, oh, he's listened to some Leon Thomas, or, oh, he's listened to some, you know, Joe Williams. Oh, he's into Andy Bay, you know, which is, you know, it's what happens when you're coming out of the gate. You know, to his credit, like these are some heavy precursors. You know, these are big shoes to fill. Yeah. And he does, like, when he steps into them, he does not embarrass himself. So very clearly, this is a young man with something to say. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, I'm really happy with this debut statement, and I can't wait for the next one, you know?
Yeah. And we've got some things that fell out of the window, but I'm looking forward to new music locally from Sumi Tonoka. I know you're going to be having something where you speak with her.
That's right.
And you mentioned Fred Hirsch, that trio record too, which is coming out soon, is also one to listen to.
Yeah, and I, So I guess we've reached the end of our endorsement cycle here.
Yes.
And I'll just note that, you know, I've been, so already, you know, we're at the midpoint, which means that my ear is now turned to, you know, September, October, November releases, trying to sort of process where we're headed. Oh my gosh. There are things that I can't disclose yet. I'm sorry, but we've got a lot of great music yet to come in 2025. So we stand by these records. They're very exciting. They will be in the conversation, but keep it tuned right here.
More to come.
Subscribe to The Late Set if you're not already a subscriber, because we will be talking about this music as it, you know, as it hits our stereos and as it hits the airwaves at WRTI.
That's right. You can find The Late Set at thelateset.org. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And this is made possible by WRTI members. We are non-commercial public radio in Philadelphia, WRTI, listener supported. You can make a pledge too at WRTI.org. The show is hosted by me, Josh Jackson, and
Nate Chenin. Our producer is Alex Arif.
Our camera operators and production assistants are Delia Joyce
and Melanie Spiegel.
On our next episode, Pops, Ricky Riccardi at the Louis Armstrong House Museum in Queens. That's going to be
fun. Late set field trip, yeah. Our operations and production manager is Tyler McClure.
Associate general manager for programming and content and lots of other words, Josh Jackson.
WRTI's general manager is Bill Johnson.
He's the adult.
Stop by WRTI.org to see everything else we've got cooking here in Philadelphia and beyond. Thank you.